Hello and welcome to An Aromatic Life. Oh, do I have a fun episode for you today. We're going to explore the world of scent in cinema. I sat down with two of my favorite people who are experts on the subject, and they shared so many incredible and fun facts about what's been done over the past century to make the movie watching experience smellier. We talk about what scent can do to add richness to the cinematic story, what genres it works for best. And of course, I needed to understand how you can make something so uncontrollable as scent actually work. Turns out there's lots of different ways you can deliver smells to the viewer. I think my favorite part was learning about the 1960 movie Scent of Mystery, which my guest Tammy created a documentary around called Inglorious Smell-O-Vision. Be sure to listen as they talk about the incredible and way ahead of its time, Smell Brain. Oh, and wait till you learn what they have in store for this year. If you happen to live in Melbourne or Chicago, you'll definitely want to check out the scented cinematic events they have planned there. Let me introduce you to my guests. Tammy Bernstock is a writer, director, and event producer with a unique specialization in scented and immersive experiences. Her career spans several facets of the screen-based industry, highlighted by 12 years in the children's department at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Here she executive produced the award-winning digital portal, The Playground. Tammy's fascination with integrating scent into experiences dates to her 1985 thesis, Attempts to Record Smell for the Cinema. Her passion for exploring the intersections of scent, cinema, and immersive experiences remains as strong as ever. In 2019, she co-directed and produced the scented documentary feature that I just mentioned, Inglorious Smell-O-Vision, which tells the story of the godfather of scented cinema and is captivating audiences across Australia. Tammy's accomplishments include her successful olfactory restoration of the pioneering Smell-O-Vision feature film Scent of Mystery and its companion animated short A Tale of Old Whiff, collaborating with the Institute for Art and Olfaction. Tammy reimagined this original stinker into a novel, participatory scented experience with successful screenings in Hollywood, Copenhagen, and the United Kingdom. In addition to her film endeavors, Tammy works with children, engaging their noses, hearts, and minds in scented storytelling. I love that. Now, Jazz Brooks is a computer science PhD student at the University of Chicago. Their doctoral research focuses on engineering devices that chemically stimulate and manipulate the human senses. These chemical interfaces have reduced power consumption for thermal feedback, miniaturized feedback mechanisms for haptic wearables, created novel modes of interaction for taste, and inspired new sensations like stereo smell. In their spare time, they independently explore media archaeology, focusing on historical scent technologies and associated media from the 20th century onwards. Their research involves conserving the 1960s cinematic scent technologies Aromarama and Smell-O-Vision, capturing oral histories from dot-com era scent tech companies like DigiSense and TriSense, and uncovering scented film exhibitions from 1900 to 1959. Their co-curatorial work was a finalist for the 2022 Sadakichi Award for Experimental Use of Scent. I mean, come on, these two are powerhouses, wouldn't you agree? Oh, one last thing before we get started. Be sure to listen all the way to the end because their five scents that best describe them are priceless. You'll love it. Okay, let's get started. Enjoy my conversation with Tammy Bernstock and Jazz Brooks. This is An Aromatic Life, the podcast that aims to shed light on our beautiful sense of smell and increase its profile in a culture dominated by sight and sound. My name is Frau Kigalia. I'm a certified aromatherapist and smell coach who spent over 20 years in and around the fragrance industry. What I know for sure, after all these years, is that our sense of smell is powerful, yet is so underappreciated. There's so much we can do to harness our sense of smell to be well. So join me as I explore this mesmerizing sense from all different angles and learn what it can do for you. Enjoy the show. I want to welcome you to An Aromatic Life, Tammy and Jazz. Thank you so much for being here. I am incredibly excited to talk to you both.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm super excited to chat.
We're going to explore all things scent and cinema, which is a topic I haven't even explored on this podcast. So I'm really excited to get into it. But before we do that, I always like to ask my guests a question at the beginning. And I can't wait to hear what you both have to say. So I want to ask you, what does the sense of smell mean to you?
It's kind of everything. It just adds a dimension, I think, to life. And it was just last week I had COVID for the first time and lost my sense of smell just for a short period of time. And I was completely horrified. It was the middle of the night and I actually reached out to Jazz. I was running around the house trying to smell everything. I cleaned my teeth. I went and smelt materials. I tried to smell myself. And it was frightening because it just is such a reminder that it just is part of every aspect of our life, isn't it? It's just completely, place, people, experience. It's a dimension which I value so very much.
I'm going to almost steal Tammy's statement because I also had COVID.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 2 days ago. And I likewise messaged Tammy about it where my smell would like come in and out.
Really?
Actually, I'm not even sure I don't think it was actually COVID. I got a test and it was negative, but I lost my smell and
nonetheless,
taste.
Yeah,
it was very strange. Nothing. It came back. Yeah. It's fine. It was weird. It would disappear every hour almost. But like Tammy, I would say that for me, smell is basically something very grounding as an experience. I know everybody talks about memory being often associated with smell, but it's such a strong experience. It almost adds color to life, I would say. When you're not having it, it's everything's kind of like very plain and the same. And then I just remember like the first smell that I got back briefly was the smell of paper towels, which is a very odd one.
Oh, wow.
It was oddly sensual at the same time.
Yes, yes.
But yeah.
Why not?
I guess in those moments, it was just very grounding as an experience.
To that effect, I guess I would also want to ask you when you were little, you know, kind of looking back, do you think you were connected a lot to your sense of smell? I know I wasn't personally, but sometimes people are. Sometimes people are really, you know, have been connected with their sense of smell from the beginning. So I'm just curious how that was for you, Tammy.
Very much so. My family are all, we all have rather big noses and we're all very keen smellers. So it was a huge part of our life growing up with cooking and stuff in the garden and, yeah, again, place. We were encouraged to use our noses as much as the other senses. I'm very grateful to my parents for that.
That's great. How about you, Jeff?
When I was a kid, apparently, I was very adamant about wanting to be apparently a brain surgeon and a baker at the same time.
What a combination.
I know. And people would always joke, to my frustration that I remember at least, saying like, oh, like, what if you mix up the tools? That'd be pretty horrifying. But I guess I didn't land too far away from that. So my work currently kind of does things like in between the brain and taste or smell. So
right,
I guess
right,
that hasn't,
right.
That's been a through line to some extent.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking you've actually managed to kind of do that in a way. So.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's great. That's great. Well, let's get into scent, shall we? I wanted to ask how you got interested in scent to begin with. I mean, if you say you were kind of connected, not, I mean, Tammy, you were very connected to your sense of smell, but Jazz, maybe indirectly through food, but how did you get into the work that you're doing now? I'm just curious, how did you come to do what you're doing now?
So the scented cinema work that I'm involved in now came from, I was at film school here in Australia in the late 70s, and there was no internet, but I went down the wormhole of scented cinema. So my graduate paper was about attempts to record smell for the cinema, and that's when I came across The Scent of Mystery, which was the film that then, you know, several decades later,
right,
revived.
Right.
So it was very early days, and I'm again like Jazz, I think we both these sort of curious beasts who find different rabbit holes to go down, and it takes you on this extraordinary journey, and now it's so much easier. You just, you know, endlessly can find these incredible things in archive and first person accounts, which weren't available then, but it started off when I was at film school.
Right. I would argue 70s. It gets even more dangerous because it's so available now and you could just spend hours on the internet going down different rabbit holes, right?
Yes, you do have to go out and smell the garden every now and again.
I love it. I love it. How about you, Jazz?
I had started my PhD, so this is around when COVID had hit, I would say it was like really the turning point. And there was just before I had done a media arts festival at the University of Chicago, where there was a couple different olfactory works, including actually, coincidentally, Tammy giving a talk with John Anderson, The Scent of Mystery and Inglorious Smell-O-Vision, her documentary. And so once COVID had hit and then we were all locked down, I was kind of desperate to find like a way to connect with people. I think everybody was at the time. And it ended up being a huge chance to meet people in that we actually reached out to each other and collaborated on putting together a panel and making scratch and stiff cards for A Tale of Old Whiff so that everybody online could watch it. So we were about like 240 people. I remember like putting stickers on a card in my house and just mailing it all over the world, Barbados, everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And that was really, I guess, like because of Tammy, the turning point on that at the time, where I was starting to look at like, okay, like Senate Cinema is something very intriguing. And the next step on that was basically me being curious about these technologies at the time. Like Tammy and you were saying, there's so much information online these days because libraries are scanning the old newspapers and so forth, that I also joined the chase through the rabbit hole. And here I am doing a bunch of research as well with Tammy on Senate Cinema, reviving it and even like doing new projects on that front. So I guess it's really
very bad influence on each other.
I think it's a wonderful influence. It's so exciting.
We fuel each other's like late night Wikipedia rabbit holes.
I love it. And we will get into Scent and Cinema, but I wanted to ask you first a little bit about scent as a medium of expression. And I wanted to talk about how it can convey messages and really enhance experiences. And I wanted to just share a brief observation I have, and I want to get your thoughts on that. So unlike visual and auditory experiences, scented experiences are hard to control, right? Scents are fleeting. Some smells stick around longer than others. And probably more importantly, are left to the interpretation of the individual who smells them, right? So there's all kinds of variables involved. So I just want to ask you, how do you see scent as an effective medium that can really convey a deeper experience for the participant, both negative or positive?
I think obviously there are things that are to do with subjectivity and individual experience and memory tied into scent. But it just, again, it's that kind of whole idea of adding a layer, which is often just even subliminal and evocative and to do with, you know, emotion and memory. And, you know, I often think about it in relation to music and films, that when you see an amazing film, quite often the first time you watch it, you're not even necessarily aware of the soundtrack music. And then you watch it again and you think, how could I not have noticed that? So right. I feel like with scent, despite the uncontrollability, which is, I don't see, you know, I guess there are some aspects of that which are quite fun, but generally it is quite hard to manage. But I think it can add just such a rich layer to an experience that resonates with people on a very deep level.
So you're saying despite all of that, all the challenges,
you're always wrangling smells. There's no getting around it. The other thing that we discuss endlessly is, you know, the sprays, okay, people, they're great to have individual sprays, but people might spray themselves in the eyes. Should we try and do it in a, you know, a latest discussion as a solid perfume format? And then you've got the fiddly lids, which aren't accessible to everyone. Or you do it atmospherically, but then you've got the complications of cost and other, there's no perfect way that we've discovered to do it. We do it in a whole range of ways, but we want it to be tangible. Sorry, I'm getting into more of a detailed topic here. But yes, I think it is quite uncontrollable, which makes it fascinating because you're constantly problem solving, which is another thing that we like doing. Experimenting and problem solving. Try something. Right. Okay, don't spray the spray of, you know, a running of the bulls on your coat and annoy people accidentally.
How about you, Jess?
I feel like the way we've been talking about smell, Tammy and I, recently on like a directorial point, like if we're talking about kind of like how we're doing scent direction or thinking about the design, it oftentimes is striking a balance between conveying information about what you see or what you're hearing. So maybe like it might have like a supporting role at times, but also really trying to at the same time balance out like the theme or the emotional tone that's currently happening. I think unlike a lot of other mediums, smell has that almost like emotion is something so easily attainable or like with smell. You can have, for example, like I have some fragrances in front of me, like you can have a lavender smell, and that's very straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's realistic. You can see a lavender. But a lavender smell could also be very sharp. It can be intense. It can be choking almost in its notes, or it can have a very light and subtle aspect that's airy. And so just choosing how that smell is coming across and which notes you're highlighting really changes the tone of the film itself. And that's been something that's very exciting to play with, I feel like, and what we've like played with together as well. Like we were doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and we were thinking about like, how do we really emphasize that this character is not good or going through like terrible things? Or there was a joke inside of it, for example, that required some research, where they talk about like a neighborhood in Manhattan. And Tammy and I realized that they were actually doing a reference to, Tammy, do you remember the...
Yes, it was marijuana scent from that particular period coming up through the sewer. And what they'd smell, they could identify the area in Manhattan in the era. So I asked people who lived there in that era what they thought the scents were. And it was...
Well, that's and then, so cool.
Recently with the Nosferatu things, I was just really thinking, like I did a Nosferatu with smells, but trying to always like... pair that idea of like, okay, well, if it's something in the environment, how are we conveying that to the person, but also overlaying that with information of like, oh, what should you be feeling in that moment, almost like a visceral reaction. So I think a great example is like also like sulfur odors, for example. It's not just that an odor is bad, it's that it's bad to the point of being repugnant. Your stomach is churning. And then you have that feeling while you're watching the movie at the same time.
It's very visceral. It's just in you,
and,
right?
And certainly there are scents that are associated with danger that we've used that, that again, people, you know, your heart beats faster and you feel, you know, it's something which is, you know, when we talk about subjectivity, there are certain scents that seem to have through
line,
animals
like many,
and survival. Then you've got that feeling of danger because it's gas or it's fire in Australia. You know, there are things that are fairly universal in people's responses for this time and place.
Right. So would you say that the uncontrollability of scent is an advantage versus the visual and auditory? Jazz, I'd love to know your perspective of someone who's creating devices.
It's definitely something very fun to play with. On like a more like sensual side, I think it's something that is exciting, that it's leaky almost. It doesn't contain itself very easily. I think about moments, for example, when I'm outside or just on the street, and in Chicago, I was on a street, very cold, and then suddenly I get hit with the smell of chocolate, and I look around, and there's no chocolate near me, no chocolate shops, nothing. And it's actually that like there's chocolate manufacturing places that are miles away from me, like maybe like 5 miles away, and that their emissions are essentially reaching me through the airs. There's moments like that. That's just like the fact that it can't be contained is almost magical in some sense. But yeah, if you ask most people that are doing devices, they'll probably say that it's difficult.
And it's one thing they don't want. I mean, but it's a challenging in a positive way, I guess. You can say, I can conquer anything.
And it's also just a question of that kind of experience is subtle, right? You have to have like a sudden burst of smell and then it disappears.
Yeah.
So being able to reproduce those things with devices it's very difficult but rewarding once you have that kind of like subtlety being able to be produced.
Right. No, that's great. Tammy, I would think for you, how do you take that uncontrollability, you know, and make it an advantage in a way?
Well, I think that it, despite the sort of delivery technical stuff and also around opting into the experience or choosing to be part of it or not, which is important. I get a huge amount of joy out of work with kids. The curiosity, the imagination, the playfulness, the experimentation is all amazing. And, you know, that's how generally most scent experiences, that's what I try and play with. So in that way, the uncontrollability is exciting. It's just when you've got a particular brief and you want to give people the best experience that it becomes more vital that you wrangle the smells in some way, which means that people can experience it but not be sickened or annoyed. There's so many complications to it, which make it fun, because I think, you know, it is an exciting area to be working in because so many people are exploring things, and so there's this wonderful community and you're constantly learning. You know, you think you're imagining and you're having discussions and you're thinking of how else can we try this? So, well, I certainly have always been excited by projects where they're very open-ended. So that in that way, being uncontrollable is an exciting thing. But when you're trying to think about a particular experience, it then does become a sense, you know, and also money comes into it, like if you had unlimited funds and so on. So you've then got to try and corral the experience into the best it can possibly be for the project and the money and the audience that you're dealing with. But with children, it's just a lot of fun because it's that subjectivity is terrific. You're just asking questions, you're playing, you're experimenting, yes, or you're exploring.
All right, so what role do you see scent playing in telling their own stories as opposed to enhancing an existing story? Can scent be the star of the show?
I mean, yes. I keep going back and forth on this question. I think it's scent is something that's oftentimes very contextually dependent, whether that's like evoking it with a word or helping frame things. It might be that oftentimes with fragrances that are like on the cheaper end or like that are a bit harder to pinpoint the exact identity of it, you need the help of a context to help make it more of a uniform experience. So whether that's putting a picture up so everyone's like, oh, like whatever facets there are, everybody agrees at least that it's like a flower or something, regardless of how specific it is, or if you use a word or a sound. I've been thinking more and more that context can just be fragrances themselves. So like a sequence of fragrances or an animation of fragrances that people can learn or just experience storylines with fragrances themselves. I've played with that. I had a paper last year, and Tammy was actually a part of this along with Simon Nienthal, called Spell and Paste. We made like basically cassettes with scents, which were just children's scratch and sniff stickers. And it's got paper reels where you can put the stickers on and then you advance it under your nose so that the odors pass by. And I think a lot of the people that played around with it, they actually could make stories. I remember a couple of people, like students and things like that, making guessing games or stories where it's all about just fragrances passing by the nose, and that it seemed to work. But it's, yeah, I mean, I guess to answer this, that question is like, probably you can make that experience.
Right.
It's
right.
The affordance of like a mixture of modalities, like visual, sound, and smell is different from just only smell.
Exactly.
Well. But yeah,
that's true.
Like, you know, those eating in the dark experiences that people put on around the world.
Oh, yeah.
There could definitely be, you know, such great possibilities for something which was quite meditative where you we haven't done it yet, but let's do it. Where you sat in a space where you atmospherically did a symphony of scents and just took people through that. But like the cinema, I think it's great to do things where people don't feel too, you know, pious about it, and where they could talk, you know, where you're sitting there with a group of other people smelling waves of things coming through and talking about it, about what they're experiencing. I think it could be great. You know, I think it would be really an interesting way to do something where you just privileged that sense above others and explored it with other people communally. It'd be fun. I'll go to that if it's on.
Exactly. I was just thinking about how collectively experiencing scent is just so rewarding.
We've always encouraged people that the participatory cinema experiences that we tend to put on aren't reverential. Like, I suppose.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you know, we do encourage people to be part of it and to talk and to a little bit. Like, certainly the stuff I've done, which has been historical or children's or. I mean, I'm sure there are certain films where you really just want to sit and have that experience. But I think part of going to a cinema, you know, is the fun of being there. And, well, there's also the downside, which is people are crunching things and talking and coughing. So you want to lift the good parts of the communal cinema experience now that we're back in them, right?
I think also just fundamentally, smell produces an urge to speak or talk about it. That's something that Tammy and I've seen, like even back when we did like Tale of Old Whiff online. It's there. I'm just thinking about all these like experiences like that. For example, like I know like in the US there's always these examples of like people smelling something bad and your first reaction is like bring it to someone else and you're like, smell this too. And it's such an interesting behavior, right? That you want to share an odor with someone else and talk about it. I think it might be partially that, like, maybe it's to help us identify the odor or express what the odor is. Maybe it's like, I know people talk about how English oftentimes is not very rich in odorous words. That's right. At the same time, we're so, like, we don't just use one single word. We talk sentences about, like, a fragrance, and we talk entire paragraphs, and we chat with other people to try and really nail what that is as an experience. I remember, so with Tale of Old Whiff, people in the chat being like, oh, it's my grandma's fragrance, or this chocolate reminds me of the one that I ate like 20 years ago. For another one, Leather Goddesses of Phobos, someone was like, oh, this smells exactly like urinal cakes. And then someone was like, someone else was like, oh, you know, it's really funny that you say that, because the active ingredient in urinal cakes is the same thing as mothballs.
Oh, look at that.
But it's just these associations that come out almost like wordplay. I think, yeah, and I guess I'll throw out, like, this is something that I've really enjoyed from one of Tammy's recent projects, where you were, like, playing with games and wordplay. Just, like, the interplay with words and smell is so exciting, and just communication. Yes. At a recent screening, I remember I had a terrible smell that was, like, rotten eggs and repugnant, and I have it appear twice. And the second time, the audience oftentimes screams. They're just like, I'm not going to smell that one again. But it's so fun hearing people's reaction and, like, communication with each other. It's so, that's why you go to movie theaters, right? You want, you don't go in isolation. You want to be able to be there with other people.
Okay, so let's delve into using scent in the cinematic experience in a movie theater. I've thought a lot about this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. So I feel like we're really disconnected with the movie experience, with the story that's being told on the screen. I mean, from a truly immersive experience, if you will. I would argue the actual olfactory experience we're currently having is a disconnect. So we smell popcorn and the smell of people around us, maybe even the noise of people coughing and eating said popcorn. But that has no connection to the story. So to me, there's this glass wall between the viewer or participant and the screen. You don't feel completely connected with the experience. Any thoughts on that?
One, I love this question. And it's just making my mind go in so many different directions. I guess the first one is that I'm just going to give, like, credit to some amazing people like Catherine Klepper. She's a phenomenal researcher who did research on, and Tammy's the one who introduced me actually to Catherine. She has a thesis on these kinds of experiences, including smell vision. And so she talks about how oftentimes in cinemas, it's been historically desired that you'd want to forget your environment. You want to kind of, like, completely forget that your body's there. That's why we dim it completely. You want to try and make, like, the walls very absorbent in audio so that you don't hear other people around you. The ventilation is there so that you don't feel, like, the heat outside. It's like almost a perfect room so that everything dissolves except for the screen in front of you.
Wow.
And smells kind of, as we were saying before, like, it's hard to contain them and so forth. But what's interesting about, like, I've been doing, like, historical research ever since I met Tammy on scent technologies and so forth. So Tammy is an expert on smell-o-vision, which triggered my interest in things like aromarama and looking at very early uses of smell, as well as later ones like polyester. This is John Waters, who introduced scratch and sniff into movie theaters, or Rugrats Go Wild more recently, and Spy Kids 4D. What's been interesting about looking at the comments people have oftentimes in response to these movies is the connection that they have with the characters on screen is a big one. So, for example, this is something that I presented last year. I'm trying to publish as a paper now. I'm doing everything backwards. But when you think about John Waters' polyester, John Waters is always very playful when he talks about it. He's like, oh, like, it's just smells, and I'm subjugating everybody to horrible odors. Look at what people are willing to pay to smell bad odors for. And it's all very funny when you hear it this way, because I think oftentimes John Waters downplays kind of, like, the interesting almost genuine collections that he's producing with for people. And when you look at Polyester, what's really interesting is that you're following the life of Francine Fishpaw, who's this woman in the suburbs, played by Divine, very straightforwardly. And Francine has a phenomenal nose, and she's basically going through life with aspirations of becoming like the perfect suburban wife, the perfect mom, and so forth. And nothing goes right. And as nothing goes right, she gets subjugated with all these terrible odors, like natural gas, flatulence, things that are funny. And at the same time, what happens is that you're being subjugated to this. So you're not only is Francine experiencing that, you get to experience those negative emotions and connect with her negative reaction. And so it reinforces that connection or that empathy almost that you have with the character on screen in a way that's so unique. I think that's, it's like the visceral aspect of it is like serving into this, the reactions kind of being cute at the same time as serving into this. There's a fantastic example of this in Rugrats Go Wild. Someone tweeted about this in my research and I saw this, was that they open a can of like sardines and you scratch and smell and it's got that like pungent fish smell. And this person that tweeted it was like, I reacted negatively and I was like, ugh. And then the characters on screen did too. And in that moment, they felt so proud to have the same reactions as the people on screen. So there's just this like very intense, like, I guess like I'll reference something else that I saw when I was researching it even earlier. It just, it really breathes life into the movie, like you're saying, right? It's almost like a two-dimensional screen. And from there, you're creating this space between the two of you where you're both reacting to the atmosphere, to the empty area, to the air. So that's one big thing that I feel like smell is able to bring to the movie theater in some sense, is that connection, almost like dissolving that glass between the two of them.
Tammy, do you have anything
that is,
you want to add?
That is interesting. And Jazz's work, I've just been in preparation for some screenings. We've been looking at Jazz's work in creating sense for the Nosferatu, the original 1922 film. And you've taken a lot of that point of view aspect of your interest through in that one, and that you're shifting between the perspectives of the three characters, the three main characters in the film, and you're taking on this kind of journey with them as they smell things and interact with each other, which I find really fascinating. We'll talk a bit more about it, I'm sure, with the restoration of Scent of Mystery that with Saskia Wilson-Brown from the Institute of Art and Olfaction, when we talked about how we were going to reimagine that film without the luxury of the scent, the Mellovision brain, the original technology, and we made it a participatory experience in a theatre. And like we talked about a lot of different aspects of how we were going to use scent. And so there, we didn't explore point of view as much, except, I suppose, through the fact that the film was written for smell. So there were clues in terms of the identity of the main character and of the pipe-smoking baddie. But we looked at sort of big complex atmospheres for place, because it was all shot in Spain. So we looked at that. We looked at spot effects. And again, we replicated things that happened in the film, like the opening sequence with Rose and the garlic and things like that. And then we had, so we had story-related clues because we had the luxury of a film that was written for smell, and we had atmospheres and we had, spot effects. So, there's so many different, like each film that Jazz and I now choose and curate, we look at it in relation to how scent could add to it. And not all, certainly not all films are suitable. So we very carefully choose and curate what we want to scent and have a lot of discussions about what we're going to add through the layer of smell. Like, it's firstly, if they're films that aren't new and being written for smell, you've got to choose very carefully which ones are going to work well. And a lot of films already have the sense of smell in them through the language and the images. So you feel like you don't just need to, have the scene emphasized with smell because it's kind of already there. So, it's partly curating which film it would add to, and then thinking about what we're going to present that's going to enhance the experience.
Right, right. I would guess that certain genres are more open to a scented experience, especially if it's some kind of like a horror movie, probably, or I'm trying to think of certain types of films that it would be a lot more fun to add scent to. Would you agree, or do you think it could be anything, really?
When we were working with, on the Ninja Turtle film, and it was Umbrella Films here in Australia, and we got excited because the catalogue's enormous, and it had, it was very exciting just to go through history because they have obviously old films and new films. And it was, I don't think I was thinking in genre particularly. I mean, I do think there are possibilities, and certainly for participatory experiences, which is where we might go for something. But it just seemed to me that there were immense numbers of possibilities, more than I thought. Like originally, I was a bit sort of snooty about the idea, I suppose, of taking an old film and adding scent, because I just was a more purist and felt that film should be written for smell. But I don't know, I've become less less snooty. I don't know. Or maybe I can just see the potential, and that, you know, part of what we want to do anyway is just give people the experience. And so, you know, making a whole new film that's written for smell is less accessible than finding something where you think it will add a layer of magic.
Right, right.
I think there's two things that come to mind, I guess, like going back on the historical side. It's always funny seeing what people think and don't think would work for smell. And people change their minds all the time. So, for example, Hans Laube, the inventor of smell-o-vision, his initial, I think, thought process that was that smell would be fantastic for something like a suspense film. So, like, you would know, or you'd be hinted at, like, the killer is coming, and this the odor will be hinting that. Or you can kind of, like, create new associations. Like, if there's, like, the smell of a lily, and then people start association, like a sense of anxiety with it, then you can reuse that when it's a high tension moment to produce that effect again, as well as mentioning like advertisements for perfumes, of course. But then 20 years later, he would reappear and say that actually comedy is more suited for smell and not like the suspense, for example.
Interesting.
And people change their point of views very often on this. Romance is oftentimes mentioned, of course. Documentaries is always mentioned. Like, yeah. Food is going to be there. I think from our experiences, any kind of movie is basically suitable for it. I think the biggest thing that I've been thinking about personally was the way you deliver an odor kind of changes what movies can be used, because you want to have enough space almost in the film for people to be able to go look away and look at a card and come back to it. So like things like a high-paced action movie like Mission Impossible 5 or something, it might be harder to integrate smells with like a scratch and sniff card, because you can't always have, you can't afford people looking away to engage with the odor. And it's a very simple thing, but that might be like one of the big things. Of course, there's atmospheric odors that you can use for that to kind of bring it in. But I do think that at the very least, regardless of genre, space in the movie has to exist for the people to be able to react to the odor and kind of integrate it into their experience.
So one of the things that I also find interesting is that scent can take you to new places, to experiences that you've never had before. So I think of Australia, I've never been there. So I wanted to ask you, in what ways can scent introduce the participant to new experiences and new points of view?
In 1959, so basically when Scent of Mystery and Smell-O-Vision was kind of announced, there was another movie that was also announced, and it was Behind the Great Wall in Aromarama. It was like the competitor. And so these two movies and technologies form what was known as the Battle of the Smellies. They basically duped it out to try and become like, quote unquote, the first smell movie, which, by the way, I will give credit to Hans Laube. He actually won that title like 20 years earlier. So it's kind of like a fake setup. But
right.
Anyways, I digress on that point. But Aromarama, they had an interesting choice. They didn't go with writing an entirely new movie. They actually took a movie that won at the Venice Film Festival, if I remember right, 2 years before that. And it's this interesting documentary from Carlo Lozzani. Some people might recognize his name in the film world. He does a lot of like spaghetti westerns oftentimes, or like he's very famous in Italy. And so he made this very intriguing documentary going behind the steel curtain in China and shows and documents Chinese culture at the time, practices like nightclubs, the whole shebang. It's very intriguing. And they grab this movie and they essentially decide they were to add odors to it. And one of the big challenges that you have is that you're introducing odors that a lot of the audience might not even know what they smell like, right? most of them probably haven't traveled to China and came back right? to tell people like what it's like. And you see that in the reviews, actually. So some people talk, like a couple of the reviewers actually went to China and they talk about it. But what's interesting is that the perfumer, Selma Weidenfeld, she actually regionalized the odors, the best way I can put it. So instead of doing like direct translations, I bet they tried to do that for some of the notes, like incense. At the time, the US was importing a lot of incense. So they probably had an understanding of like what joss sticks or things like that might smell like. But what does the Yangtze River smell like? I don't think anybody would know. And this became a point of contention. So newspapers were like, how do we know that it's authentic? And at the same time, Selma Weidenfeld, what she was doing was she went to like the New Jersey River and based her the fragrance on the smell of the New Jersey River at the time. And basically like adapting some aspects of it. Like the banquet sequence in the movie has notes that are very much focused on Chinese American cuisine notes. If you look at like the write-ups of it. And yeah, it's difficult because when people went to that movie, journalists and newspapers like incited them to try and become judges as to whether the movie was able to produce like authentic fragrance experiences. But the audience has no reference point for what authenticity means. So all that does is basically provoke the situation where they have a distrust for like the fragrances that are being produced. Because they're like, okay, well, we can't be sure that it's authentic. And then it's a documentary, so you have to kind of like trust it to some extent that it is producing an authentic experience. Right. I don't know. It's such a fascinating situation to struggle. With there's the whole, it just brings up this whole idea of like documentary smells and how do you bring that to people that don't have a reference point?
And also who creates the smells?
Selma Weidenfeld is just
which is incredibly relevant at the moment too. Very relevant in the whole smell culture at the moment is authenticity of the creation of the scents, right?
That is correct. Really good point.
More challenges. That's a great example. And I am thinking that also Jazz's work at the moment is looking at a lot of early films that might just have one atmosphere that was delivered through the air conditioning, which again, Klepper, so people sort of go, oh, well, that was an old fashioned way of doing things, but actually it's very effective. And if you've got one or two scents that you want to share with the audience without too much equipment and hoo-ha, that's like music subliminal in the background. There's the sense of place comes to mind. You were talking about, when we're looking at Australian titles, we haven't done it, but we might, is Picnic at Hanging Rock. You know, it's a pivotal Australian film all set in this mysterious environment with space to smell in terms of the narrative. This is not the series, the original film. It's all set in this incredible place. And I would love to get someone from Australia, Jocelyn Fullerton, who I work with, to create a kind of Australian scent. Bush scent in summer for that film in particular, and in the period, a bit nostalgic, a little bit with referencing to the time that the film was made as well. Like I think if you're working with fantastic perfumers, that's the other thing too, the materials, who's creating the smells. When we did, made the scent of Spain, or actually the documentary I made about Scent of Mystery, because the Scent of Mystery feature was all shot in Spain over a year. And, when she was asking me the questions about what part of Spain, where's the point of view? What are you trying to capture? So there's a subtlety. If you're doing something which is perhaps a one scent experience, which is introducing people to place and time, that has to be, Luca Turin said when we were putting the smells on the film, he said, the technology, the plumbing, keep the plumbing simple and make sure you get really good scents.
Yeah.
And that's something I've held close to, that this, really the fantastic people who compose amazing atmospheric fragrances and with good materials, like that is so key to the experience. Like you don't want to cheapen things by having, something crappy. You want really good quality scent, which is going to introduce the audience to something they're going to really enjoy and not wallow in, but really immerse themselves in, as opposed to irritate them.
So let's go back in time and go back to the beginning of the 20th century when people were first introduced to the concept of scent in cinema. So Jazz, I'm going to ask you, can you give us some historical context on when scent in cinema really started? I think you alluded to it a little bit, but please take us back.
Yeah. So when you look at references talking about smell-o-vision or the history of scent in cinema, oftentimes they're going to give you like a hint about one of them. And the big one is going to be 1906, I think is the date that people usually put, with Roxy Rothafel. And when people hear that name, they might recognize the name Roxy, because Roxy is often used for the Roxy theaters. Roxy movie palaces or things like that. And there's a very good reason for that. Roxy Rothafel was the person who invented modern cinema as we know it, in terms of like going to a movie theater and like really going out to go see a movie, and how that building is structured, things like that. So it's very interesting that cinema starts with him as well, in some sense. So most people, like in Avery Dilbert's book or Catherine's thesis, they'll mention that Roxy Rothafel in 1906 took some kind of like festival documentary and added The Smell of Roses. And that really incited like a curiosity in me, in terms of like, they oftentimes don't really know like what movie it was. There's like inconsistencies in the history of it. So it's very fun. It's almost like a detective puzzle or a mystery to solve. So for me, that triggered like like if we don't know exactly what's going on here, like what was happening? So what ends up happening is that in 1910, Roxy Rothafel, he had this theater called the Family Theater. It was in the back of the building. And this was at the time where it wasn't even movie theaters back then. It was like variety shows, or Nickelodeons is another term for it, where you would have like in the corner of the place, a crank to like watch like a film reel, and there'll be different acts. So someone's going to be singing tonight and you bring the whole family over, or you'll be done with the work and you'll go there if you're like a worker. And Roxy Rothafel talks about this in some interviews where he says that in 1910, he received a documentary from SNA Films, which was called Rose Parade at Pasadena. So in Pasadena, California, there's a Rose Parade every year. And so there's floats with a bunch of flowers passing by from all the social clubs in the area. And Roxy Rothafel's reaction as like an entertainer to this movie was like, well, this is not star quality material. It needs something more. And so he realized that there was a bunch of roses in the film, and his instinct was to go, oh, I can go to the corner pharmacist / drugstore and get a rose perfume. And thus comes scented cinema. He dips streamers into this rose perfume and puts it in front of fans, and basically shows the screens this movie with this rose perfume kind of like exuding through it. And he oftentimes mentions the reactions afterwards, specifically this woman who passes by him on the way out and is like, well, I don't know what you did to this movie, but it's almost as if like I could smell the roses coming out of the film itself. It's such a funny thing, right? Like we're laughing about that. It's like so obvious. But Roxy Rothafel, in most people's accounts, would basically never do smell again. And what I've been finding in my research right now is that that's not true. This man was obsessed. So he would go on to essentially...
Our kind of guy,
not even joking. Like he basically, at every major turn of his career, you can find a review that talks about the fragrances that he puts on. So I've been writing up this paper. You saw me like present it with Odoropa, with William Tullett, which was very kind of him. But basically, film exhibition with smell was very, very common at the time. Even Charlie Chaplin writes about it briefly in 1930. And the big difference from projects like Hounslow's projects or future ones like John Waters with Polyester or Scent of Mystery and so forth, is that smell and scented cinema at the time didn't come from Hollywood or from film directors. Okay. It was oftentimes the film exhibitors, so the people putting on the show, that would do it. And it makes sense because film exhibitors were the ones that would oftentimes do the musical accompaniment or additional kind of like the tinting. So like adding colors to the film so that it would be like, oh, you can tell that it's night or it's day based on the color that would be on top of it. And Rothafel is such a character. He oftentimes referred to these as his effects, and he advocated budgets of like the equivalent of $1 million in today's money for perfumes in the movie theater yearly for motion picture exhibitors at the time. So it's just such a fascinating thing that it kind of disappears in the 1930s for the most part. There's a couple examples that are very intriguing where people experimented with like multi-scented, like a full scent track for movies in a couple different locations around that time in the 40s as well.
But and the world, like don't forget Hans at the World Fair.
And Hans at the World Fair and in Switzerland, where he creates a movie called My Dream, My Traum, with a full scent track and gets shown in New York. But yeah, like early scented cinema really comes from just that desire to like increase the experience in different ways. Some people that I was chatting with also think that it might have been an attempt for like film exhibitors to have control over the movie, like the tone of the film in different ways. Because oftentimes film exhibitors at the time would sometimes recut the movie based on like the drop on ending. They had a lot of power at the time, right? Like they
it's like they were the director and producers at the end.
They were kind of like a secondary editor slash like director.
Interesting, isn't it, Jazz, that it's come full circle in terms of, you know, what we now, the term immersive seems to be used too much probably, but you know, those very earliest versions of it were that, you know, people interacting with a number of elements in a space, including scent.
Some of them were basically like stage effects, lighting in the space. It did like movies, silent films. I know that like at this point people understand that silent films aren't silent. They have sound and musical accompaniment. But silent films weren't just audio. They were oftentimes like spectacles almost of like a bunch of different things around them. And I always feel like this is related to like the conversation about movie theaters like dying, quote unquote.
Yes.
People talk about smell-o-vision kind of coming up or Aromarama because TV was taking people out of sight of movie theaters. And at the same time, it's just, it's funny because you see that conversation exist in 1920. Like it's the movie theater is always dying. It's funny to say it that way.
The movie theater's always dying. Yes.
Well, every entertainment source has to vie for its entertainment, right?
Yes,
for its audience.
Yes.
And people use that to like dismiss smell-o-vision. But it's funny because I just find it funny because it's always been like that. It's always been about how do you engage people in a way that's exciting and fun or that really makes them feel something.
And communal power of the communal experience.
Yes.
Yeah. And so like 1920, for example, some of the movie stars like Joan Crawford or Anita Page, they had signature scents, as they called them. And people would actually buy them at movie theaters. Or some movies would exhibit the movie with that smell and being like distributed. So, and they talk about how like that was an attempt to try and infatuate people coming back. So it's just fascinating.
So we should get into smell-o-vision, my dear Tammy. Smell-o-vision, what a great idea, with an unfortunate quick demise, right? You guys worked together on bringing this ill-fated technology into the limelight again for all of us to understand and enjoy. And specifically, you, Tammy, created a documentary, the Inglorious Smell-o-vision documentary. So I want to talk about that. Tammy, you made it a mission to get to the bottom of what went wrong, and you learned a few things along the way, I imagine, right? So before we get into the documentary specifically, can you actually start by telling us a little bit about the inventor of smell-o-vision, this man that you've talked a lot about, Hans Laub? Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, so a complicated character. It's so interesting that anyone who gets involved in this area becomes kind of an obsessive. And I think, you know, Hans Laub, it was his life's work. And also just a lot of, I did look into what went wrong, but what I discovered mainly is what went right. That really, you know, smell-o-vision was a great success in many ways, but it was kiboshed by the press, the power of the press around the time. So yeah, so Hans was a Swiss inventor who, mysterious, complex character who I got to know through his daughter, Carmen, who lives in New York City and reached out when she heard that I was doing this project, just found me on Facebook, I think. And we've now, you know, we're still great friends and colleagues. And she had a wealth of material and reminiscence and the smell brain in her apartment. So yeah, he was a complicated, obsessive pioneer, someone who really saw the potential in scented cinema and pushed through in a way to create this incredible technology that, you know, that was a smell brain that powered a scent track to a movie that was written for smell and had an all-star cast and crew. Jack Cardiff directed, Elizabeth Taylor was a producer, and in the film, Diana Dawes, Michael Todd Jr. ended up being the producer. I mean, just a remarkable film that needed to, it needs people to know about it. Like, you know, Polyester is a very important film and I like it a lot. And John Waters was inspired by Smell-O-Vision. He knew about it, but barely anyone knows about it. If you, even now, if you say what you do, they go, oh yeah, Polyester, I saw that. And you're thinking, well, yes, but there was before that, there was such a richness, and the scent of mystery in Smell-O-Vision was a pivotal moment, which, and in many ways, as we discovered through the film and interviewing people who'd seen it firsthand, a great success.
Right, right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the whole smell brain, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it started, his intention was for something else, right? To get rid of the cigarette smoke or something in the theaters. Is that what the original intention was?
He was involved in the technology in cinemas, but and that was, again, that's another area that, that Jazz is kind of an expert on, in terms of the original kind of scent in cinema experience, was to extract bad smells or put in a deodorizer, which would mean that people didn't smell each other in a sweaty cinema.
Wow.
But Hans's big achievement, and it was, you know, earlier on in the 30s with, it was called at that stage, Centervision, was this, you know, the system. But and the key elements to it were that there were a series of scents that were, you know, like an audio track. It was automatic. It was, each seat in the cinema was set up with an individual piping that you could smell, puffs of the scent would come out. It, all of the scents had relevance to the movie, which was written for smell. So in both My Dream and in Scent of Mystery, that a pivotal part of it was that the narrative was constructed with scent as a main player in it.
I don't know, Jazz, do you want to talk to anything about
that? I guess I'll answer your question about like this, the smoking portion.
Yeah.
So Catherine Klepper's thesis, phenomenal research again, points to like the history of, on her end, one of the histories of scent in cinema, basically coming from a desire to deodorize. So basically in early cinemas or Nickelodeons, one thing people would complain about was the odors of other people, right? You're basically coming off of work. You might smell sweaty. You might have perfumes or other things. And you're all like going into this small space together. And movie exhibitors wanted to apparently decrease that, right? Like to basically get more people to stay and not go away because other people are there. And so a big effort was put into things like ventilation systems and air conditioning units, which eventually would be used by systems like Aromarama or Smell to introduce odors. But that was the big fundamental thing, was like to try and remove odors from the space so that you can be there without smelling other people. Particularly when people talk about this, it's about smelling poverty from other people or the like body odors, things that were kind of like taboo in some sense at the time. Yeah, I mean, Smell-O-Vision, we have a lot to thank Hans Laube for in the history of movie theaters with smell. The work that he did with Scent-O-Vision and with Smell-O-Vision were amazing, right? Contextually, the device is phenomenal. Like Tammy was saying, we have the privilege that Carmen, his daughter, allowed us to bring the device from her apartment from all the way in Manhattan, where it was there since, I believe, he like built this version, this particular device, to the University of Chicago, where I've been documenting it with Tammy. And it's this stunning piece of equipment where it's got like a turntable and like a needle for injecting the odor into the space. And basically, as the film passes by, there'll be signals on the magnetic strip that'll tell the device to rotate to the right odor and to propel a fragrance into the movie theater.
Wow.
And when you think about Scent of Mystery in this, it's not just one fragrance per scene. We're talking about like multiple fragrances. So you'll have like a whole sequence of maybe three fragrances in one sequence. That's super interesting. And it's crazy that almost half a century, I guess, yeah, like 60 years has passed at this point, or 62 years. And that technology is basically fundamentally the same as like contemporary technologies for smell and smell dispersal. So this man was way ahead of his time, is what I would say, by a long shot.
And underappreciated.
Underappreciated.
Same thing with Mike Todd Jr., the producer of that. I say that because like to have the vision to produce an entire movie around smell that has elements like Tammy highlights that are dependent on odors. Like Tammy has the scent joke, right? That you usually demonstrate for people.
Yeah. It's coffee, okay. Very strong. So we had that during the documentary when we screened it. We actually had that as a little drinkable, so people can experience that with a warning that it's only for people over 18 years old.
It's just so cool, like seeing someone so far ahead of their time produce these kinds of experiences. Like the coffee one, visually and auditorily, you have no context for what's going mm-hmm. on. You just see a person having coffee, and then you get hit with that strong alcohol odor. Mm-hmm. Essentially. Oh. And then it gives you context like, oh no, the driver is most likely drunk. He's getting very drunk this morning.
That's right. Interesting. Yeah.
So it's just these fantastic.
And in the same way, you were talking before about the presence of people without them being seen. So you've got these two clues. You've got the perfume of the scent of the mystery woman who is revealed later to be mm-hmm. Elizabeth Taylor, who's only visible for much of the film by her scent, and also the presence of the baddie who's a pipe smoking, and it's a particular kind of American tobacco. You don't necessarily see them on screen, but you're aware of their presence narratively through odors.
So I understand the device, or why did they say this movie failed or the device failed, or what happened there exactly?
Well, you know, again, in the documentary, we've got first-person accounts where people, you can just see that look in their eyes. You know, you've done a lot of these podcasts where someone's awake and alive, and you can see that in the guys who are talking about their experience. They were young boys mainly at the time when we're watching the film. But there was kind of, you know, now to an extent, press has become democratized, and there's a lot of different points of view that one can read about everything. But at the time, there were two key reviewers who made a joke of it and just said it was terrible. And it kind of put the kibosh on it. And, I mean, it was expensive to set up in a cinema. It was an expensive technology where you actually had to customize a cinema with the apparatus to do it. So there was costs involved. And there was also this battle of the smellies, which Jazz has really extended the research on that, but that's part of the documentary as well, this competing system that came out 2 weeks earlier. And was a very genuine attempt. Like in the literature around that, at the time I was making the film, it was supposedly a, you know, kind of like a cheap, quickly developed technology, which was created by a marketing executive to steal the thunder of this other film that had been. But it actually isn't true. And one of my great regrets is that I did actually hunt down Charles Weiss, the smell creator for that Aromarama film, and had lined up to interview him. And then it was silence, and he passed away in the couple of weeks between him agreeing to actually talk and tell his story. I feel so sad about that, because one of the things about Inglourious Smell-O-Vision I feel really proud of is that we captured a lot of different testimonials from people, and it seemed like a really important part of history. Art Shea, the photographer, interviews with people where that piece of history is recorded now, and that other bits of, you know, that can be used as source material. And I do have a lot of extra things that are not in the film. So anyone who's an academic or is interested in this area, I'm so happy to share everything. That's my mission, has always been that. I wanted to mention also Susan Todd, who's the daughter of Mike Todd Jr., the producer of the film, who also was interviewed in the Inglourious Smell-O-Vision documentary and is a wonderful friend now. And she also shared her personal reminiscences and memories, as well as the original Scent of Mystery fragrance. So she had a small container of the actual Elizabeth Taylor's signature perfume, which still smells amazing, and we're currently getting analysed. In future screenings of the film, we'd love to do a sort of reformulation of that and actually let people experience that. What in many ways is the first celebrity fragrance, because totally associated with the character in the film, Elizabeth Taylor. Remarkable. Yeah. And Susan Todd has been an amazing friend. And also I think she and her and Carmen learnt a lot about their parents, their fathers, through this film, in that, you know, it was not a positive aspect of the past. And through the film, I think we really gave credit to people who were visionaries, and that was important.
That's amazing. Oh, yeah, to be able to smell Elizabeth Taylor's fragrance again.
Yeah. Amazing. I'll jump in and say that it's such a privilege to be able to interact with that, because for people that are listening, the odds that we still have a sample a fragrance that was used in the original Scent of Mystery is incredible. So Susan, just like for some background, she found it on eBay listing years ago.
She did.
And the bottle was actually during the like opening screenings of the film. The night of, they would actually give like gifts of this fragrance to the audience members. And so what Susan found was a copy of that. And well, not a copy, but the actual thing on eBay, like a bottle of it. And it's the last fragrance from the Scent of Mystery that we have, that exists, that we know of.
Well, thank God for eBay.
Right. And for Susan Todd, like that's especially.
Yes, for Susan Todd, for looking for it.
Because she's been so generous in terms of like allowing us to try and conserve it and reformulate it for people. So it might have been distributed by Schiaparelli. We're trying to figure that out right now. But this, it's just so exciting to have like that, like a literal smell from that time. Like not just the visuals or writings about it, but the odor itself. That's huge.
Huge. Thank you for sharing that. Can we get the experience of seeing this documentary and experiencing the documentary in the future, do you think?
Yeah,
do you
I
have
hope
to be
so.
In Australia?
Australian audiences finally got to see it last year because it was completed just before COVID hit, and we had screenings lined up, and a week out of Australia closing down entirely, we had to cancel everything. So it's only just been shown here. Hopefully we're going to show it as part of Chicago University series in the States. We do have scratch and sniff cards for it. So, you know, and I would be actually happy to share a link with people who are interested in seeing it, and we can send them a scratch and sniff card. You know, I really want it to be seen. The experience does come with, how many smells have I got at the moment? Six scents. Well, that happen as part of the movie. Maybe it's eight. Can't remember now. Anyway, lots of things which you sniff and smell and share and whatnot. And so that's one way of experiencing. But I have made a scratch and sniff card for it as well, which you could smell with along with the link to the film. And I am really happy to share it. Theatrically, it's a big deal to put on. So don't have any particular plans at the moment, except for the University of Chicago series, hopefully. Chicago
anybody
University.
Anybody listening?
Yeah, that's right.
We'll make sure Tammy gets in touch with you.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if we could get it more widely distributed or just experienced.
Yeah, I'm totally up for it. And sorry, I also want to say that John Anderson is the co-writer, director, producer, editor. He's a Chicago guy who, just again reached out. I can never remember quite how, but knew I was doing. Mainly, he produces music documentaries. He's fantastic, and he came on board and shot a couple of the interviews, and then just came on as a partner in the film, and it would never have got made without him. So,
okay, shout out to him then. That's great. Can I ask you, Tammy? So, what was it like seeing people experience the film?
It was so fun.
Yeah,
it was so wonderful because it's always been the aim is Garlic is as good as 10 Mothers has the honor of being the first centered documentary, which is the Les Blank film from the 80s. But it was always intended that this documentary be centered and centered in a way that allowed people to experience a range of different ways that smell, from very low tech, like goodie bags with actual food things that you can sniff, plus sprays, but that personally, plus atmospheric scents and drink. So I wanted people to get the full experience of the range of things that are possible, and also very much be a participatory, don't sit quietly, like watch the film again because it's quite packed with information. But while you're experiencing, just be there. Like people got popcorn cups with a whole range of different little treasures in them and a scent menu, and there were numbers and there was laughter and there was people sharing. And, you know, I really wanted it to emulate or excite people about the experience, not just be sort of a dry documentary. So hopefully the content is also interesting and lively. And it's not only about the past, but I also interview a bunch of amazing artists and people working in the area now. So it also talks about the future of centered cinema and what is possible. So it's supposed to kind of give context and inspire people. But very much the experience of the doco is that it is centered and good fun, hopefully.
Well, I'm in. Anywhere you
go.
I'm
good.
I'm coming to Chicago then. No, I'm excited. Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, Jazzy, this is a question for you, I suppose, is I understand that there were still many people inspired to add scent in cinema even after the quote failure of Smell-O-Vision. Can you give us some examples of, you know, people who decided to incorporate scent into cinema after Smell-O-Vision?
Oh man. One, I have like a long spreadsheet of just like historical experiences that like were written for smell or that were added with smell afterwards. And it's like 140 nice. Things so far.
Okay.
So it's quite long.
Yeah, but that's a good sign. That's a good sign. People were inspired. Yeah.
I mean, people kept doing stuff afterwards. It was never really like a deterrent in some sense. For example, Charles Weiss, the inventor of Aromarama, he actually continued afterwards. Tammy and I found like evidence that he was doing stuff. Tammy found rumors that he might have added smell in Boca Raton, Florida, in the area as well. Of course, John Waters. So John Waters was brilliant, inspired by like all of the perfume magazines and so forth. And I bet scratch and sniff books at the time as well. He leveraged the technology of scratch and sniff stickers and then used that for his movie experience. So that's what you get. You get like a card with 10 stickers with odors. Uh-huh, and then the movie tells you when to scratch things and deliver it yourself. Or you don't. People can choose if they do stuff. They have agency over their own bodies. But movies kept on doing it. Even like television would. So for example, in the 90s, Nickelodeon had a special, a Smell-O-Vision special, as they called it. There was Rugrats Go Wild that had stuff in 2003.
Okay.
Spy Kids 4D is another one. And Robert Rodriguez is such a fascinating character on that front, because if anyone knows, like in film history, Robert Rodriguez did Spy Kids 3D. And the reason why that's important is because he revived 3D movies as like a commercial experience. And so it's interesting that after that, he was like, you know what I'm going to try? I'm going to try smells. Not as successful on that front, but very interesting. Lots of people write about that experience on Twitter and so forth, because they're like, I remember this from my childhood. Like, does anybody else remember this? And then it creates so many discussions. But movies keep on happening. Like right now, there's Holy Trinity from Glam Hag.
Okay.
It's a queer film set in Chicago, if I remember right. She's local. And she did a version of it with Scratch and Sniff recently, I think in the last 2 years. There's a horror movie that was shot on VHS called Spirit Animal. There's Tammy's work, of course.
And also the 4D cinema phenomena was big for a while, wasn't it? Like, it seems to have faded down a bit now, but the physical effects, including scent, were very much part of that experience, weren't they?
Yeah.
That went huge internationally for a while. Yeah.
Like, the two big ones are things like 4DX from Sony, for example. Yeah. And then I'm blanking on the other competitor name. They were in a conference that I was at. But I remember, like, 4DX, like, some of these effects were quite impressive. At the time, I thought that these were kind of like computer generated and almost random. And then I found an interview that was like, no, like people are sitting down and like actually crafting the experience very, very deliberately. And I say that because I think people might have like a similar point of view as what I originally had, or a prejudice against the 4DX stuff. I would recommend people going to try it. It's quite impressive as an experience sometimes. When it's good, it really like hits the experience home, I would say.
Nice.
But and on the technology side, there are a lot of people who are working very hard to create solutions for cinema experiences, aren't there? Like, it's this big international community of people who get as obsessed as Hans and Charles Weiss and try and wrangle this medium. But a lot of them are, we hear about them a lot, don't we, Jazz? The various different attempts now, complex systems. Yep. And simpler.
There's like companies like OVR Technology, Aromasense. There's Neil Harris, right?
Neil Harris. So Neil Harris worked on the Hollywood Cinerama Dome experience of the original Center of Mystery. Yeah, amazing. Huge fans with trunks.
So like in almost every place, and I see versions of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory done everywhere. Same thing with, what's it called again? Oh gosh, I'm blanking on terms. There's a movie theater chain called Alamo Draft House.
Okay.
It came out of Texas in particular, but they have what's called movie parties. And so they'll have like props or things like that with their movie. And there's one like Elf with smells. I just got their cards on eBay because I'm going to scan them. I have like a archive of these things.
Oh my goodness, you got another pile of things.
Yeah, I've got, I'm scared of like showing my web. I shouldn't be like blocking my webcam off. Right? My space right now is like a hoarder's nest or something, essentially. Yeah,
where is the definition between, you know, fascinated, obsessive, and hoarder?
Yeah, I mean, what Tammy hinted at and I think is starting to shape up is almost like a I don't want to say canon, but like a canon of scented experiences for movies is starting to take shape. The Scent of Mystery, for example, Behind the Great Wall. And what Tammy and I have been doing or trying to do is make those available to people as an experience. And so for the University of Chicago, we're going to be proposing a series soon. One that's going to be on more contemporary films. And so fingers crossed for everybody. If you're if you're in the Chicago area, let me know.
Or we could come. I don't have to be in the area. I'll just come.
Or if you're like a movie theater and you want to collaborate, you should reach out to Tammy and I.
Yeah.
And then one of the things that we have coming in on the horizon, should I mention that, Tammy?
Yes, please.
Okay. It seems like a natural progression of this conversation is we're collaborating with a movie theater in Australia, Cinema Nova, in Melbourne, to put on a series on the first weekend of July with films of the smell. And I don't know if we're going to announce the lineup quite yet. There's one that we're currently like figuring out the details of, but it's going to be most likely 3 to 4 screenings.
It'd be good to just mention the two of them that are definitely confirmed, because I think, you know, because they're very different. And they're and one of them is the Willy Wonka experience, which will be amazing. I think it's just going to be scent is one aspect of it, goodie bags and all sorts of treats, dress ups and stuff. It's going to be really good, fun thing. And the other one is the Only Lovers Left Alive, the Jim Jarmusch film, which will be done in a very different way with scents from Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab in the States, delivered in small blood vials. Everyone will get a set. And yeah, so we want to demonstrate again what is possible across genres and experiences over a weekend. And there's two others which we'll just have to let you know about when we have them confirmed.
A quick shout out on the Willy Wonka side is that we want to shout out Clinton McClung and Megan Dickerson. And so they were the first two that really shaped that experience for Willy Wonka in Smell-O-Vision, as they put it. Megan first did it in Boston, and then Clinton actually inherited it and then went in Seattle International Film Festival for years tweaking that experience. And so the one that we're going to be putting up in Melbourne is actually going to be drawing from theirs and shaping it anew once more. So big shout out to both of them. They're phenomenal, phenomenal people and programmers and experienced designers. So yeah.
I always like to ask my guests 3 questions at the end, and I shared those questions with you. I can't wait to hear what you have to say, and I always get to learn a little bit more about my guests. But I'll start with the first question. What's your favorite smell right now? Any smell in the whole wide world? I'll start with Tammy.
Well, as mentioned at the beginning of this interview, just having come out of the fear of losing my sense of smell through COVID, everything is so intensely brilliant and I'm so grateful for them. But one of the ones that I'm most loving at the moment is our local bakery's sourdough bread. It's the best. Every day treat. Yeah. Poppy seed bagel. Very, very good. Homemade marmalade.
Making me hungry. I guess like for me, there's one that I always come back to that's kind of odd, but I love acetic acid, white vinegar. Very simple, very effective, sharp. I don't know why I always like that. But I guess like two that come to mind, I have like a set of fragrances from Fragranted by Therese Western right now.
Sure, yeah.
I have like sitting out. And I quite like the Albius Vanilla fragrance. That's what I was smelling.
Yes.
It's been drying down for 2 days on this trip. And it's quite enjoyable. So I guess I'll shout out Therese as well.
Hey, right Therese. So shout out to Therese.
I have her fragrances lined up right in front of me.
I love it. I love it. And then I wanted to ask you if you would be willing to share a favorite scent memory that you have.
Oh, I have to say that it was so surreal being at the Cinerama Dome in Hollywood, putting on the Scent of Mystery film in collaboration with all these wonderful people, Saskia and John Foley we had. I just couldn't believe it. I really was overwhelmed that it's such an idea that I had. Like, you know, I'm a children's TV maker by trade and just had this crazy idea and found all these unbelievable collaborators from around the world. And we were there and you know, also Dave Strohmeyer, need to shout out to him too, because he restored the film and that was the beginning of the whole revival. And it was just the most magic thing. I just couldn't stop smiling. And it was just 700 people smelling and enjoying on a huge screen. It was just, it was once in a lifetime, fantastic thing.
Yeah, so for you, those 6 scents, or however many you said you had, really, each time you smell those 6, it takes you back to that time, to that place,
and
with
those
20 people.
We had 20 smells.
Oh, you're 20, sorry.
Yeah, we had 20 in the film, and we also had scented actors. So John Foley dressed people in period costumes who wafted their way through the cinema, as well as the huge fans, as well as the personal sprays. It was magical, and it actually happened. Like, it's very hard to believe, you know, after the last few years, that something like that could happen. And I I'll always hold on to that. It's one of the biggest highlights.
Well, on that note, Chaz, good luck. Tell me about your set memory after that wonderful set memory.
Yeah, I guess I'll tell a fun story about smell recently. So with like the Nosferatu card, the last one is like this horrible, horrible smell. And one that whenever I smell it now, it reminds me of this stuff. But it appears twice, and the second time in all three screenings, I've always heard someone scream, "I don't want to smell that one again." It's so funny. It's like in the moment, it's and you'll hear half of the audience actually go and smell it again and be like gagging for a second. Like, it's pretty bad.
That's a good scent memory. We'll take it. It's not the traditional scent memories that we're talking about here, but they certainly are very fun to hear. So thank you for sharing that. I guess I'll just end with a last question then. I love hearing these because I know they can be quite challenging, but I'm just curious to hear what you guys have to say. So Tammy, I'll start with you. What would you say are five smells that describe you?
I'm going to say the sea because the sea. I'm going to go back to bread, but I'm going to add honey to it. I do love honey, and I smell. I've got both my daughters have bees, and I'm treated to a whole array of incredible scented honeys that they live in very different areas, and I smell those. I'd say back on the family thing, grandson smell, and I can't remember if that's five, but the last one would be every day I collect a flower to put in the vase that my mother made, and then Nomi, who started off this whole journey, we used to make perfumes together, so I put a particular flower that I find in the neighborhood in that vase, and it was orange blossom. So I put that in and take a photo and send it to her, which I must do shortly.
That is just beautiful. Wow.
Good tradition. I love it. It really makes it all through, again, I don't know why I keep mentioning COVID only because I just got it, but during that time, every day, you know, when we were allowed to walk within 5 kilometers of home, I'd go and find something to smell and take a photo of. And that became a diary of that time. And so I like that tradition of just appreciating something every day in the area I live.
Really great. All right, Jeff.
Do I can't tell. I abstain. I abstain.
No. We need to hear five things.
Okay, let's see. Okay, I guess I'll just go with things that just come to mind, like associative thoughts at this point. So I don't know why I thought of the smell of Robitussin. It's like this odd cherry synthetic smell. Mm-hmm. Don't know why if that would describe me at all. That sounds like a pretty horrible one. I guess there's this banana smell in this children's book for 2-year-olds that I keep on thinking about that has a picture of a banana, and it smells like just a freshly peeled banana. It's phenomenal. I would recommend that to everybody. That's the second one that I can think of that I guess I'm going to associate to myself.
Very
right now.
Authentic. We'll call it authentic.
this is going to be my personality from now on.
That's right. I'm making notes, Jess.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that.
Because we're going to meet. We're actually going to meet for the first time in real life when Jazz comes to Australia in July.
Okay. Yeah. So this is the preview of that.
The encounter. Yeah. I'll make sure to smell like Robitussin with a ripe banana in my hand.
Get the fragrance.
I'll make sure.
Out.
I guess nail polish remover is another one that comes to mind. The smell. I guess very heaty, very sharp, very airy in some sense. That's three. Rye bread comes to mind. It's a little bit molasses, a little bit heavier, rounded, and then I don't know. One more. I think the smell of cement, it's dust. It's a little bit earthy. I guess that'll
be
me.
We have external interpretations of you. I'm going to give you cardamom. It's one of the ones I like to give guests who can't think of things because. Cardamom to me is very warm, and you're very warm. You're very generous with your time and with all the research. I mean, we are just so lucky to have both of you doing what you do because I think it just makes the world that much richer. And makes obviously the world of cinema that much richer. But yeah, I give you cardamom too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do love cardamom, so I'm not going to say no. It's like awesome.
Oh, there you go.
We often do experiences where we go, oh, you know, we're things that people might have at home in their cupboard. So I'm tempted to go in there and have a quick look and see whether I could actually smell along with that.
Right. Yeah. You could see Jazz now. He has all kinds of bottles of things to smell. I mean,
yeah, it's like 16 bottles filled with like, yeah, 16 bottles of like home stuff, like toothpaste and stuff like that.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me. It was a true pleasure to talk to you about the subject, scent and cinema. And I hope we get to do it again. I can't wait for all these events to come out, and I can't wait to share links to them as they come out. And I'll try to always add them into the show notes if people need to go back in there and revisit them. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. Amazing. Yeah.
Thanks for joining me on An Aromatic Life. If you're interested in learning more about your sense of smell from all different perspectives, subscribe to the podcast and invite your friends too. And it would be so helpful if you could rate the podcast so it helps others find it too. I also invite you to check out my website, anaromaticlife.com, where I share lots of information, including my projects around the sense of smell. Until next time, remember to smell everything and have a wonderful day.